This is January 24th, 1982, Albuquerque, New Mexico. Good morning, Bartholomew.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I've been asked to bring forward a question that I do with a bit of trepidation. Because, well, the subject of the question is to discuss the unusual types of symptoms, if you could call them that, that often accompany or sometimes accompany states of meditation. And my trepidation is that when I'm done and you see this great vast cornucopia of possibilities and you sit there and you say, well, none of these have happened to me, nothing, not one of these marvelous things has ever occurred to me, I am a failure, let's quit, I will never again feel that I am a real seeker. And that is my fear, because I would like to state at the onset, and I would ask you to remember it through whatever amount of this is pertinent to you, none of the signs of enlightenment or understanding have to come this way. Are we all clear? I mean this absolutely clearly. But we must also admit and acknowledge that for some people, their physical apparatus responds to deep meditation, through deep seeking moment to moment, through deep intensive self-searching in the times of emotional difficulties and so forth. Certain manifestations do seem to occur. And the question is, if we could discuss them and perhaps come to some kind of feeling of how to make them useful to you. Oftentimes, the body responds to an intake in energy. If you are on any kind of a real quest, any kind of a true inner quest, almost imperceptibly to you, perhaps, your physical body changes. Many times people go into deep meditation seeking or deep searching of whatever kind, and as a byproduct find that their heart condition has improved, so forth. All of these things have happened. Why? Is it because God has smiled upon you and said, I will make you well? No. It's much more immediate and much more exciting than that kind of vast, hopeless situation of, I hope God's noticing me as I sit here meditating. I really hope he's paying attention. You see, it's not like that at all. When you acknowledge, even on a hopeful level, that you are nothing more or less than a state of energy moving, undulating all of the time, then you must also come to the understanding that around you is also vast amounts and different types, if you could, of energy awash all around you at all times too. You can't see these with your physical eyes. You oftentimes can't hear them. You may feel them once in a while, but you're not really conscious in the total sense that they're present. Why should you meditate? I've been called on the carpet for this again and again. Why do you make me meditate? I find it a great bore. Fine, then don't, but find some way, somehow in your life, through music, through dance, through laughter, through whatever is meaningful, find a way that you will drop your usual view of seeing the world and allow the otherness that's always awash around you to start moving. Why is sacred dancing of any importance? Is it because it came out of Findhorn? No. It is important because in the process of letting go to the flood and the flow of motion, of movement, of sound, you have a possibility of dropping your old way of seeing things just for that amount of time. Most of the time you see with your mind. I repeat, most of the time you see with your mind. You do not see with your eyes, you see with your mind. The trouble with seeing with your mind is that you are addicted to the same kind of mental thoughts. You see yourself as a, let us say, a woman a mother, a wife, a business person. However, one person has all these views, all right? And this is who you are. And you really believe that that is who you are. Now, if, for example, there is a trauma and your child dies or your spouse leaves or whatever happens, why do you become so afraid? What is it that becomes fearful in you? If you would look very clearly, you would see the thing that has provoked the fear is that a view of yourself is now gone. I am not a mother anymore. I am not. Well, if I am not a mother, if I am not a wife, who am I? And what the ego will strive to do and what the mind will strive to do is to fill again, as quickly as possible, another view of you that matches so that you don't have to be anxious. You don't have to say, well, I don't know who I am. Do you understand? Each time there's a trauma in your life, you have a chance. It says, aha, maybe this is the time I can drop my old view of myself and I don't have to be that way. Do you see? It's energy going into building a picture of who you are. You think that you are a continuous person. You are not a continuous person. And if you would only watch carefully, you would know that you are not. You are not what you think you are. You are not some kind of a glued together conglomerate of all of these different views of yourself. But that's what you do. You glue yourself together and you hope that it looks nice to other people. That's one of your main concerns. You glue it together. I hope everybody loves it. Or at least I hope the people that I care about really love it. But you have only taken fragments and stuck them together and said, ah, this is me. Now, part of you gets destroyed. You're no longer a wife. Oh, good grief. What am I? Well, I'll tell you what you usually flood it with. I am a rejected woman. I am a rejected man. That's the first thing that floods into that empty space. At that moment, when there is a vacancy appropriate in your life, may I make one suggestion? Instead of filling it with another mentalization of who you are, would you hold a part of you in a state that I would call not knowing? Do you understand? Would you just hold one part of you that says, you know what? I don't know what I am. I don't know what I am. And the more of these that you can loosen up, the more of you will be in a state of not knowing. But you are so concerned with gluing this composite together that you will not allow a vacancy to appear. Watch yourself carefully. Watch yourself carefully. It's even in such small ramifications as you have a dog that you love and the dog dies, the first thing you do is you go and buy another dog. You think it's because you love the dog. The fact is there's a certain part of your psyche that is very much attached to yourself as a dog lover. I'm being very frank. These outer manifestations are very important. You understand that people who love animals have a positive view. Do you understand? You're always trying to put all these parts of yourself together and say, ah, I'm acceptable. The world loves me. All right. When you begin to meditate, you start to give yourself an opportunity to see how you rise and fall all of the time. One moment you see yourself in one way, the next moment you see yourself in another way, and if you're paying close attention, what you're going to see is a lot of people moving, and they're all you. A lot of views of yourself, and they're all you. And instead of seeing them as something that you have to continuously be until you die, you hit upon the wonderful awareness, good heavens, I could change this. Good heavens, I don't have to be that view of myself anymore. Good heavens, isn't that wonderful? Now, you're not going to let go of the ones that you like. You're only going to let go of the ones that you don't like. But so what? Start where you are. Let go of the ones that you don't like. I am being absolutely literal. If there is a view of yourself that you do not like, I ask you to deliberately and with all due respect to change it to something else. You created it. You can change it. You don't have to go through this world carrying this great residue of people around because you're really not any of them in any case. But in that meditation, what happens to you and to the physical being is that as you become more and more quiet, as you become more and more attuned, you're going to start bringing into your energy field other types of energy. And the minute these other types of energy impinge on your physical frame, you are going to have various kinds of responses. Some of you will have spontaneous visions. All right, let's talk about visions. There are two kinds of visions, the ones that make you feel very happy and the ones that make you very afraid. Now, if you happen to have one of those that makes you very afraid, if you're a typical human being, you're going to say, I knew it all the time, I'm no good. I knew it all the time. I'm just a terrible person. And I'm having these terrible views of all these terrible faces, and I'm no good at all. That is not the case. That is just not the case. Behind every vision, whether it looks beatific or demonic, there is something there that is trying to catch your attention. And why? Usually it is because there is a view of yourself that they are trying to bring to your conscious mind so you can drop it. For example, if you have a negative vision, let us say something frightening manifests before your eyes, it becomes a nightmare quality, and fear comes pouring in upon you. Now, in that moment, all of you have had nightmares. Many of you awaken in the morning in a state of agitation. And what is it? Why is it? Oftentimes it's because you've had a subconscious nightmare that you haven't really brought to conscious mind, and it still lingers on and it worries you. Now, when this is the case, whether it's a visual vision or a nightmare quality to your mind or a nightmare in the dream sense, what do you do? Most of you run away. I would ask that you don't run away. I would ask that you realize that part of your process is trying to bring this fear out and present it to you very clearly. And if you will look very carefully at the nightmare quality of whatever it is you're visualizing, you will see that the more you look upon it, the more meaningful it becomes to you. There is no such thing as an evil vision. There is no such thing as an evil vision. There are only, or an evil dream, or a nightmare. It is simply something within you, out visualized now into some kind of form, that is saying, will you please look at this quality? There is something here for you to understand. For example, if you have continuous dreams or fears of loss and so forth, most of the time this is your vast self that's trying to say to you, do you really think it's so frightening? Do you really think that this is so terrifying? That's all that nightmares really are, is to try to show you again and again that you have seen the vision and you have lived through it. Do you understand? You've seen it and you've come out the other end. It isn't something that you have to continually fear and be aware of and run away from. When your body begins to respond to any kind of meditation, if you have ringing in your ears, if you have spontaneous feelings of energy, of power, if your brain seems to be filled with electrodes, if you seem to have so much energy going through you that you feel that you've been plugged into a light socket, if you have any kinds of things of this sort, one of the things you're going to do is think, good grief, I'm going crazy. I knew it all the time. My grandmother was right. You should never do this kind of thing. It's the devil, and I'm going to quit. All right, now quit if you want. But I suggest that at that stage, instead of pulling away, instead of retreating, that you take it as a sign that the energy is at long last beginning to merge in some kind of intimate way with your body form. And instead of trying to have other people describe it to you, just let it happen. Just let it happen. So what if you have ringing in your ears? You know, the modern music, was there much difference? Just allow it to happen. Don't decide that you shouldn't have it. If your eyes start to have, for example, one very close sign of good seeing, of centered seeing, is that the physical world starts to become a little bit fuzzy.
you know, it just gets a little fuzzy. The edges start to get a little lighter, and you look at people, and if you've tried this, I'd like those of you who have an intimate person in your life, try something you might find interesting, which is to stare at their face, not in their eyes, you know, but right in this area, right between the eyes and above the nose, just kind of stare at them in a soft kind of a stare. And what you're going to find as you do that is that everything begins to move. All of your visual field is going to start to change. You're going to start to see faces changing. They're going to become grizzly. They're going to become gorgeous. They're going to become male. They're going to become female. They're going to become any number of things. And you're going to think, oh my, I wonder what we had in the brownies. And it isn't the brownies at all. It is the fact that when you put this kind of awareness on someone else and hold it steady, what you're doing is you are taking what we would call the third eye energy. Isn't that a very glamorous name? But it happens to be what you've come up with. The third eye energy merges with theirs. There is a kind of a blending. And out of it, you start to have other kinds of experiences. And instead of this time saying, oh, I wonder what past life that was, and getting all into that, would you just be very aware that all this is doing is showing you the other beautiful side of this very staid and concrete vision you have of each other. You have a concrete view of each other. Those of you who have been together a long time have an even more concrete vision because you've had more years to build it. And it's easy enough to break down because when you begin to work with this kind of other energy, you see the otherness of them. And you begin to feel what stands behind this rigidity of face and self. You get to get feelings that are much more vast. And you start understanding what they all mean when they say, look, you're a mystery. And that other person is a mystery. And there's something incredibly mysterious going on between you all the time. If you have a close friend, it doesn't have to be a lover or a husband or a wife. It can just be a close friend. All you're trying to do is to see within your own self that there's an awful lot more going on here than you think with your eyes. Now, if you did not know that this kind of thing was normal, and you began to sit there quietly, and all of these faces began to take form and shape, the first thing you would do is to run to the psychiatrist and pay him $75 an hour and say, cure me, and he'd say, I'd love to, and he will take your money, and he will give you drugs, and that'll be it. He can give you, you understand, there are drugs that can take care of all of these extrasensory perceptions. You can dull yourself so that you don't have any of this going on at all. Now, what is the difference between a bona fide mental difficulty, which there are some of, and one that is a spiritually provoked or energy provoked awareness? I don't think the answer is very difficult. If after you've had one, or someone you are close to has had one of these, if on speaking to them, you can ascertain that during the experience itself, there was a feeling of energy, upliftment, interest, desire to know more, then you know that everything's on the right track. If, on the other hand, there is an overwhelming, and I use that word deliberately, overwhelming amount of fear, and the feeling of total disorientation, and the feeling that one cannot get back, then perhaps you should do something else. But in the first case, my friends, I want to be very literal. If you are really on a path, you're going to eventually run into some kind of experience that does not meet with the common mundane. And my dear friends, that's what it's all about, isn't it? If that's not what it's all about, then why are you going through this? If you want your world to stay the same, to look the same, to feel and smell and taste the same, why are we all here? Let us all go to the Super Bowl. We don't have to stay here. It would be redundant, don't you see? You are looking for something extraordinary. And when it comes, fear comes. And I understand it. It's only because the world tells you that if you do not see things in a continuous way, that you are nuts. And I would like to tell you that I think you are nuts if you see things in a continuous way, because you are not really looking. If you were really looking, you would see that this moment you are happy, this next instant you are angry, this next moment you are guilty, this next moment you are sensual, this next moment you are hungry, this next moment you are sleepy, and you tell me that that's one? You can really look at this incredible world of change and in and out and up and down and happy and sad and fearful and free of guilt and all. You see this as one? You're trying to glue yourselves together. That's all you're trying to do. May I ask that you do something a little different? Will you take the heretical position that you are none of those faces? That what you are is the observer of an incredible variety of feelings, of thoughts, of emotions. And upon the screen of who you are, all of these things come and all of these things go. When fear is present, ah, fear is here. When joy is present, ah, joy is here. Anger, anger. If you can stop getting into the real and getting messed up in the machinery, you're going to find a great deal of freedom because you are not any one of those faces, and your biggest job as a human is to keep gluing yourself together. I see this all of the time. And so when you have glued yourself together by all these composites and one of the composites falls out or one of the composites turns against you, you know, if you are a dynamic nurse and everybody loves you, that's fine. But if you start getting in trouble on your ward, what happens? What happens then? That whole view of yourself over here is now your enemy. It's something negative that is impinging upon you. And if you can only understand that you have defined yourselves in a certain way, and that you can stop defining yourself, you're going to start being free. If you really want to understand yourself, would you go home tonight and define yourself as you have defined yourself? Take a piece of paper and say, all right, who am I? You know who you think you are. Believe me. Just list it. All of the people that you think you are, and you will see this multifaceted kind of entity that you have created, that you call yourself, and then you will see, as you look at your list, that your main job is to maintain in all those areas. Maintain. I have to maintain a perfect view of myself. Let us say that you have had a divorce. Your view of yourself is probably a failure. Well, I wasn't loving enough. I wasn't able to do this. I mean, you can be infinite. And you will realize that a whole part of your view of yourself is now turning against you. Do you understand? You have turned a part of yourself against you now. It becomes your enemy. Let's say you have a job and you get fired. Instead of saying, oh, good, it probably wasn't a good match, you say, oh, my God, I'm a failure. I'll never get another job. I don't know what went wrong. You can go through all kinds of machinations instead of saying, fine, now I've got some free time. I think I'll use it in another way. Infinite choices. But what is attacking you is not your fear of not being able to pay your bills, but the view of yourself as a successful, creative, dynamic person in the world. You feel vulnerable, not because of the money. My friends, so many of you dub yourselves as materialists, and that is not my experience of you. I do not think you are materialists. I think that when a part of you is taken away, like your employment, it isn't the money, because you know you can always make do with less. Always. We've seen this time and time again. Why then do you feel so badly? Because a view of yourself as a successful person has now been replaced by a view of yourself as an unsuccessful person. If you can finally see that these are just faces, these are just stick people, if you could possibly see those wonderful little stick people with those big fat heads and the little sticks going on, if you could only see all of these views of yourself, both good and bad, as nothing more than stick people wandering through your life, having great fun, doing what they want, now successful, now not, now happy, now not. If you can get the feeling of that, that you are that which is observing all of these faces of you, then when one of those faces changes, you're not going to feel so vulnerable. You're not going to feel that you are a failure. Because the human is interesting. You can be successful in 99% of your undertaking. And if 1% of you is not successful, you will condemn yourself in its totality. And you will go around despondently drooping, unhappy, morbid, frightened. And someone else will look at your life and say, I don't see that. I see all of this. Look at all this wonderful thing that's happening in your life. You say, no, 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 look at this. And you haul out this stick figure and you put it in front of them and say, look at this. And they say, oh, I see that. All right, so you lost your job. Big deal. What about all this rest of you? No, no, look. And you pull the stick figure back out. Ask yourself this. How many times have you gone to help someone and said, look, I have 6 solutions to your problem? And they say, every time you bring it up, they say, no. Well, you could do this? No. But you could do this? No. Oh, but you could do... No. Why? You are presenting viable, exciting, electric possibilities, and they're saying, no. Why? Because they have this stick figure in front of their view, and that is all they see. When you have set the game up that you have to be totally successful in your life, you are going to fail. You cannot be totally successful. You're going to win some, and you are going to lose some, and that is the way it goes. If you arrive in this life with the idea that every step you take has to be golden and holy and wonderful and righteous and pure, you are going to fail. And where you're going to fail is not in the external world, but the internal world, because you're going to keep being anxious. Because every time one of those stick figures starts to get a little out of line, you are going to become remorselessly unhappy. And when you do that, watch your pattern. You have to go, first of all, you have to ignore all of the good parts of your life. You know, a great deal of most people's lives work just fine. Thank you very much. Really, they do. It's when you get into this habit pattern of only paying attention to the part of your life that is not going well that you get the end product after years and years of good practice of being a failure that, lo and behold, guess what you have? You have a failure. And you have done it. You have started at the beginning and refused to look at your assets and only looked at your liabilities, and you have created a monster because you look enough at your negative self and you are going to start letting those other stick figures respond in like manner, and lo and behold, you are going to have the product that you have sought for. If you can only understand that the way out of all of this is to simply stand back and watch your mind and yourself create infinite varieties of yourself, over and over again, over and over again, you are going to get on to the game, which is the game that you create with your mind, you create with your mind, you create with your mind. And when you understand that it is you that is doing the creating, two things happen. One, you free yourself from the tyranny of certain views of yourself. Many of you are living lives under tyranny. And it is a tyranny that you have imposed upon yourself. And it comes out of your refusal to see that any kind of a so-called negative experience in your life is simply one of myriads and millions of events in your life. And by your own will and choice, you go back to that event again and again and again, and you grow it and it gets larger. The extent to which an event dominates your life is the amount of energy you put into it. 2 people standing on a street corner. A bus goes by, splashes both of them. All right? Should be the same response. They're both standing in the same place. The same bus has gone by. Do you really think they will respond the same way? One will say, oh, too bad. The other will say, I'm going to get that bus driver's name. I'm going to take him to court. I'm going to send him the bill for my laundry. I am so upset. And days and days will go by, and they will tell to all of their friends, do you know what happened to me today? I stood on the street corner, and this bus came by and inundated with my... I am so furious. I found out his name, and I tried to... And so on. Infinite. And the other one has forgotten it. Forgotten it. What bus? What? I don't remember. What?
What is the difference? The event is absolutely similar.
The response tells all. Now, most of you who are upset or tyrannized by a view of yourself are doing what the person is doing who is calling the bus driver. You are revving up your motor so that you get behind in your terminology this view of yourself. And, of course, you'll tell your friends all about how terrible you are, or your friends about this terrible event. You will make it larger. You will make it larger. You will dwell upon it. You will say, how can I get even? You will say, what can I do? So on. And you have created, out of one drop, you have created a pitcher full of poison, and you are the one that's drinking it. If you were going to be fair, you would watch very carefully and see that in the next moment, after the mud has descended upon you in whatever way, through loss of job, through loss of love, through ill will from someone else, through nasty words, I don't care what it might be, if you are paying attention, you will see in the next instant after that mud descends on you, you have a choice. You are not robots. You have a choice. And in that instant, choice comes, and you can say, that's one part of me, no doubt. And you can drop it, or you can enlarge it. If you drop it, if you can really understand through meditation, if you can really understand through meditation that what I am saying is real and not just talk, then you will really see that you have a choice. You will never be free until you see that you have choice. Most of you believe that you are relentlessly robotized, and then you say God's doing it, or you say, oh, whatever you say. The fact is that instant to instant, you have choice. When you get into any kind of deep meditation, you understand one thing clearly, that things come and things go. You can hang on or you can let go. You create yourself moment to moment, out of your responses in your mind. You create it. What is this vast statement? You create your own universe. I hear people saying this, and I look at them and I think, I wonder if they understand what they're saying. You create your own universe. Does this mean somehow that you take your hands and formulate the ethers and the gases and the lights and the power? No, of course not. What does it mean, this kind of prattling? Spiritual prattling. You create your own universe. What does that mean? It means precisely that out of the million thought forms that move through your mind, you pick which ones you will hang on to. You will walk down a street, three people will smile, two people will frown. Which ones are you going to pay attention to? You wear some outrageous costume. Some people think it's terrific. Other people think you're nuts. Which one are you going to? Again and again, you select out. You say, this is the one, and then you build this picture of yourself. You create your own universe, day by day, thought by thought, choice by choice. It does not matter what is going on in your world. You select your choice of thought about that world. And well, you know it. Some people can lose their job and be exhilarated. Other people take a shotgun out and shoot themselves. It's the same event. It's the same event. You say, yes, but you don't understand. Yes, but I do understand. I do understand. And I'm asking you to start being very serious about this basic way to your own freedom. You can free yourself from tyranny without any trouble, if you will see that it is you who select and interpret and create for yourself day after day a picture of yourself, day after day. If you don't like the picture of yourself, why don't you change it? But I can't change it, they say. But you can change it, I say. You change it all the time. You change your view of yourself all the time, but the problem is you do it unconsciously. Awakening involves the process of becoming awakened to the fact that you do create, day by day, your view of yourself, your view of your events, your view of your life, your view of everything. If you once understand that, you are in a tremendously powerful position. Do you understand? That's the power that we're talking about. Because now you say, phooey, I don't feel like being depressed. There's another choice to be made. I don't feel like resentfulness. I don't... There's a choice. You want to be resentful? Choose it. It doesn't matter what you choose. Freedom comes in not only choosing the beautiful thoughts. Please, this is spiritual garbage. Sometimes it's just plain fun to get mad. So what? If you choose anger, it can be exciting, and it's probably not going to be destructive. I repeat, it's probably not going to be destructive if you choose it. But if you let your unconscious apparatus just move you relentlessly toward anger and explosion and guilt, because part of that explosion is guilty. Oh, I shouldn't be doing this. Oh, I know this is a terrible, I'm a terrible person, but I'm going to do it anyway. You're schizophrenic. Half of you is over here saying, I really want to be angry. And the other half is saying, oh, no, I don't like the view of myself as an angry person. I'm much too holy to be angry. Holy people don't get angry. Loving people don't shout and scream and yell. And so the two of you are going back and forth like this. Now, some of you are very good at swallowing anger. So you swallow it and you smile. You're very beautiful. And what's happened? This other view of yourself has won. You think you're wonderful. It's giving you a lot of mileage, all right? Understand what you do day by day by day. Choose any emotion. Why do I say do it boldly? I mean do it boldly. That's exactly what I mean. Do it out of the boldness of choice. You bet I'm going to be angry. Here it is. And that kind of clean anger. Do you know the difference between dirty anger and clean anger? Tremendous amount of difference. Clean anger says, I am so mad, and here I am, and I'm going to show it to you, and I'm being responsible for this. Dirty anger says, it's all your fault. And I tell you, I want you to just sit right there, because I'm going to tell you everything that you have done that has led me up to this point where I am so angry. And if you would just get out of my world, I would never be angry again. Maybe. Look, you sit in the control seat all of the time. But you're not conscious. Awakening means I am awakened and finally aware that out of all of the possible thought forms, out of the possible actions and responses, I am going to choose. I am going to choose. And if I keep choosing ones that make me miserable, perhaps I could be wise enough to say, I think I'll choose another one, thank you. You know, you don't eat the same kind of dinner every night. If somebody fed you something that you hated, you'd say after the second night, no. No, thank you. That makes me sick. I'm not going to eat that anymore. And they would say, all right, fine. But you don't give yourself this own privilege. Some of you have patterns that you have built up of responses to situations that are totally sickening to you. You know, you see your boyfriend talking to a girl, ooh, sick, sick, sick. There is another response. There's always another choice. There's always another choice. Something happens in your environment, you can choose something different. There is no great God pushing you down the road saying you must be angry, you must be jealous, you must be self-pitying. No. You have abdicated the power of your own control. And I ask you to reestablish yourself in the center of your own choices. And the easiest and the quickest and the fastest and the most exciting way to do it is to start paying attention to what your mind is doing and see the faces that come and the faces that go. When you see those faces, you will say, you know, I don't like the looks of some of those. I don't feel like that anymore. You made these choices years ago. Many of you made them when you were about 2 feet tall. You made these choices. The world is a terrible, awful, vulnerable place to live, and I'm scared to death, and I'm going to respond this way forever. And here you are, 6'5", huge, in charge of a corporation, totally powerful, and still inside, someone comes up to you and says something, and boom, there you are again, a frightened little child running around, all afraid. No. The choices you made then are not the choices that you can make now. And if you would only understand that, I mean absolutely literally, that you create your own world, then you will begin to be excited about your own possibilities. Your own possibilities are infinite, but they will never move one increment until you yourself have decided to make another choice. Now, someone will say, Oh, but that's very hard. It's very hard to make another choice. I don't know what that means. Do you know what I'm saying? I'm saying make another choice. That's it. Make another choice. You see your boyfriend talking to a lovely girl that you know is 100% more gorgeous than you, and you have a choice to make. You know all of the negative ones. Let's think about some of the dynamic ones, because they're all there too. At that instant, you can say, I know where that response goes, and I don't want to go down that road. I'm going to choose another one. And out of this vast repertoire of infinite possibilities, which you all have at your fingertips, you pick another one, and you say, this one. This one. It isn't hard. And I'll tell you why you don't do it. Because you still believe that if you go through your game, that you are going to change the other person. You still think that if you go to them and pull on them, don't talk to that gorgeous girl. Don't, that makes me feel terrible. Don't talk to her. That person will turn to you and say, oh, of course, I'll never talk to another gorgeous girl again, sweetheart. You're right. And you've won. You see, you have not had to do anything. Don't you see? Abdication of responsibility. You have not had to do anything. You're saying, I'm miserable, you change. You go to an ex-husband, an ex-wife, I'm miserable, you come back. You go to a child that's done something crazy, you change. As long as you are addicted to the idea that manipulating your universe from the outside is going to make you happy, then you will not change. You will go to the ends of the earth to manipulate other people to make you happy. But once you have woken up to the understanding that that has not worked, let us take our example again. Certainly the young man, if he's at all smart, will say, of course, sweetheart, I will never look at another woman again. Not until tomorrow night. We're at a new... But he will abdicate a certain amount. After all, he's invested too. It's not just you. He's invested. What is going on inside his mind? Is he thinking, oh, how he loves you, how he adores you? Or is he thinking, you know, this feels rather like a prison to me. This feels like somebody is trying to maneuver me around so that I cannot do the things that are spontaneously what I would wish to do. And it is my philosophy that in the end you will imprison both of you. Because now he has the right to come to you and says, no, you can't go to that dance workshop at the Bijou Ranch because it costs all that money to get down there, and besides you won't be here to cook my dinner, and I just don't want you to go. And now you are obligated. After all, you've made a trade-off, haven't you? I mean, he doesn't talk to gorgeous women. You don't go to sacred dancing. Why? The trouble is that you make trade-offs all the time. And then the next day something else comes up. You start the car and the engine, it revs over wrong, and you strip the gears or whatever mechanism happens here. And now you've made another trade-off. All right, dear, you can do that as long as I can go bowling on Tuesday night. Infinite relationship is nothing but a trade-off. And in the end you will see one thing. You are limiting each other day after day after day. You are both equally imprisoned. Both. If you only learn one thing, let it be this, that you are responsible for your own happiness, and you do it by changing your choices to the events that happen in your life. You do not try to change the events in your life, but you can change your response to them. The more you meditate, the more you practice self-awareness, the more you practice moment-to-moment understanding, the more of this power that we talked about earlier that brings about all of these different kinds of physical and mental and visual transformations are going to start aiding you. You're going to have more of that kind of power around you. You're going to feel more secure in your ability to make changes. And this is why, again and again, with nauseous repetition, I say, please, if you love yourself, find some way to practice some kind of centered awareness. Because out of that centered awareness, day after day, you are going to build a power base that you can count on in a moment of extremity. You will have a bank account to draw on when things do get rough and when you do want to make another choice. You cannot make choices if you feel weak.
The definition of a weak person is that they are in no position to control their own life. That means they cannot make choices. It's silly to say that you can make choices. You can dump the garbage or be a brain surgeon. Those are two complementary things. You're saying, that's impossible. I couldn't possibly. You say, you feel so helpless. All of these things. So when you say, why meditate? I say, build your power. Build your centeredness. Build your inner feeling of rapport with your inner self. That's all I'm asking you to do. Build a feeling within yourself of your own power. Out of that power, you can make changes. You can make different choices. You can select. You do not have to be a robot. And as your body starts to change, as your mind, all these things are acted upon, you know. You're not just, you know, a concrete block with somebody chiseling on the outside. You're a wonderful, wonderful conglomerate of ever-moving energy fields. And as all these things change, lo and behold, your outlook changes. And if you happen to get healed of some affliction, fine. But if not, fine. All of these things start. The mystery starts to open up. And it all begins with sitting down, and here we go again, and shutting up, and listening, and feeling, and allowing, and experiencing. That's all it takes. It isn't complicated. But one of your greatest obstacles to happiness is the belief that it is your world that makes you miserable. It is your response to that world that makes you miserable. Please understand that as deeply as you can. Put yourself in control. People trip you up because they want you to feel guilty, don't they? Why do people want you to feel guilty? If you feel guilty enough, you'll do precisely what they want you to do. We go back to the young couple in the corner with the gorgeous girl. Guilt. You're making me miserable. I want you to change your behavior so I can be happy. The travesty is enough is never enough, because that's not where your happiness comes. Please, I mean this deeply, try and understand that one basic thing, and I think you are light years ahead of where you were the moment before. Did you want to state your question?
Yes, I was just wondering what the response would be of an enlightened man to any thought or emotion that he or she experiences. Do enlightened people make choices of any kind?
You're speaking of the totally enlightened one? The totally enlightened one makes no choices because they see no benefit of one choice over another and absolutely has no preference. You see, absolutely has no preference because they know that they and the choice and every event are one in a simultaneous wholeness. And they don't care which side of the position they're on. They don't care if they're being loved or being hated. They don't care. They have no preference. So at that point, there's a choicelessness. But prior to that, my friend, there is another state. You know, not many people reach that state, as we've discussed, and it's not necessary that you do on this earth plane. But there is another state that many of you would be able to reach, which I would like to discuss, which is when you finally learn that you make choices. The first thing that you're going to do, if you're human, which I think most of you are, is that you are going to make choices to better your own life. To better your own perception, to better your own inner relationship to your universe. And I applaud that, because that will give you more of that feeling of inner power. But there is another step that comes, and get ready, some of you may not like this. And that is then, when you decide you have choices, then the next choice is you make choices in favor of others rather than yourself. And this is where you have the realm of the true spiritual teacher, who takes on the karma, if you will, of the student, who takes on the illness of the student. And other people say, if you were really enlightened, you wouldn't do that. You know, you would be able to make it go away. All of this kind of thing. There's this realm of service that you get into, where you decide, since you have choices to make, and you know it, then you willingly and totally aware make choices on behalf of others. Knowing that in that moment it may be that you suffer, It may be that things are not so convenient for you. It may be that you have a loss of some kind, but you make it anyway. And if you want a definition of a surrendered soul, I would give you that one. A surrendered soul consciously knows that they could choose A and make themselves feel better, but if they make it B, someone else does. And at that level, they say, I pick you over me. And this is not slavery. This is total freedom. To make that kind of a choice out of an ego, I think would be slavery for many of you. But made out of that higher state that says, I choose you. I choose you. Fully conscious of the results to me as a truly surrendered person. And out of that space, many of you can operate in this lifetime. I will not pretend that you can reach the state of an avatar. No, I do not do that. But I do say that you can, once you understand that you hold choices in your hands, you begin to choose for yourself, and rightfully so. But there will come a day where you will say, no, not for me anymore. For that one. For that one. For that one. And someone will say, but what about you? You'll say, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. And that is the realm of the surrendered one. And out of that comes a peace beyond description. Truly beyond description. You don't do it out of some kind of, oh, how holy I am. Because you know in the next instant you could make a choice for yourself. You don't care anymore. You just don't care anymore. I give that to you as I hope an aspiration, because I do feel that many of you in this room are capable of that kind of giving over. I really do. Avatars, no. I'm sorry to say I don't see a one in the bunch. In the true sense of a light bearer for the age. I hope I didn't offend any of you. But at the same moment, I do see tremendous potential for this other state of understanding. But it cannot come until you understand your own power to choose for yourself. And then comes the tremendous moment of, no, not my will, but thine. Thine. You know, thine isn't God, you know, as some kind of great green God in the sky. Thine is God in that other person too, you know. Don't forget that. Not my will be done. Thine. And then you have the true world server. And they don't serve because it makes them feel good. It makes them feel, they do it simply because they saw it as a choice, and it draws out of them the response that they want to make, and they make it, and it's done. I repeat, many of you are capable of that kind of response, and I would ask you, please, to give all thought to moving toward that kind of service, because I do not deny that it would not be well received. Well, I've gone on for a long time, but I thank you all for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bartholomew.